The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When we do have secret prisons, that is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, constitutional attorney, and the purveyor of the Inside Scoop, wanting to talk about all the things that are going on in Washington, some of which you know about, some of which you may not know about. Today, we're going to talk, of course, about the oil spill, how can we not, but particularly about the politics behind it. And I'm not just talking about the dramatic $20 billion fund that President Obama got from BP, but the philosophy behind it, why it was necessary for the president to act at all, the history behind all of this, why couldn't, for example, someone simply sue them to make them pay? We're going to talk about that. Also going to talk about spending, government spending. Now, you've heard every single commentator on Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, everywhere complain about government spending, complain about the deficits. Guess what? I'm not one of them. I support government spending. I support more government spending. And if you think I'm crazy, listen to how I justify it. That's coming up in this hour. And I do have an economics degree. I know what I'm talking about. I actually think it's fascinating politics, the way the Republicans, who spent so much in good times, when actually I'm against spending in good times, I'm for surpluses in good times, have now turned the political argument around to make it very, very difficult for Democrats to spend enough to get us out of the recession. They are following the Herbert Hoover strategy. I'll explain. I also want to talk about the Tea Party. Specifically about the people that are running in Kentucky and Nevada, Rand Paul and Sharon Angle. The Republican Party is kind of going off the deep end with some really radical ideas. Again, some of the ideas we haven't heard since the 1930s. It's looking to be like the midterm elections in 2010 are going to be Hoover and Roosevelt all over again. But first, the oil spill. And specifically, the apology that I'm sure you heard about by the ranking Republican on the Energy Committee in the House. Congressman Joe Barton is no newcomer to the oil industry. He was the chairman of the Energy Committee for many, many years before the Democrats took power. This is the guy who wrote energy policy. This is the guy in the pocket of oil companies. He gets hundreds of thousands of dollars a year from the oil companies. He's invested tens of thousands of dollars in the oil companies. And he's an oil company guy himself. Before he even went into Congress, he worked for ARCO. This is a guy who's Texas oil company Republican through and through. He's as much an oil man as, well, George W. Bush, ex-oil man, or Vice President Dick Cheney, ex-oil man, or ex-Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, ex-oil woman. They're all from the oil industry. Let's hear, if you haven't heard already, Congressman Barton apologize to BP and try to figure out what it's all about.
But I'm ashamed of what happened in the White House yesterday. I think it is a tragedy of the first proportion that a private corporation can be subjected to what I would characterize as a shakedown. In this case, a $20 billion shakedown. With the Attorney General of the United States, who is legitimately conducting a criminal investigation and has every right to do so to protect the interests of the American people, participating in what amounts to a $20 billion slush fund that's unprecedented in our nation's history, that's got no legal standing, and which sets, I think, a terrible precedent.
What is Joe Barton talking about? What's he talking about? What kind of shakedown did President Obama do? What is the $20 billion fund? Why is it necessary? To understand that, we have to go back into some history. I got to give you the inside scoop here. This all comes out of the Exxon Valdez spill, the second greatest oil spill in American history, but one that's already paling in comparison to the current catastrophe in the Gulf. What happened, of course, in 19, 1979, I believe it was, maybe it was 1980, there was an oil tanker that ran aground. The ship captain was drinking, and it ran aground in Alaska, in the in the Prince William Sound. Now, the Prince William Sound is like most sounds. It's a sound is a mostly enclosed bay, so it's not one with a large opening. In fact, it has a very small opening, and the ship ran aground. About 70 million gallons of oil, barrels of oil. It's gallons. 70 million gallons, because right now we're getting about 1 million gallons per day, and it's already gone above that. About 70 million gallons were spilled into Prince William Sound from this tanker. Now, of course, a tanker, unlike an oil leak coming from the ocean floor, is a finite amount of oil, right? The worst that can happen is every last bit of oil comes out of that tanker, and then we're done. It's not like oil coming out of the earth. The earth has a lot more oil than any single tanker. But tens of millions of gallons of oil spilled and contaminated the sound back in, 30 years ago. And it may surprise you to know that still to this day in Alaska, the salmon is not what it used to be. That still affects. It may surprise you to know how much of that oil was cleaned up. Let's go through the ecology of that area and compare it to today. So here you have in Alaska, what do you have? In Alaska, there is mostly rock, mostly stone, very, very different from the marshes of Louisiana. And again, as I said, there's a finite amount of oil, and a sound basically closes it off. You put a little boom across the sound, and that prevents the oil from getting out into the ocean. Right, very different here from where the well is a mile deep and in the middle of the ocean. So here you have pretty much locked in oil spill in a relatively narrow space. It's going up against rock, and rock is far easier to clean. You want to clean oil off a rock? Scrub hard, you'll get the oil off a rock. You want to clean oil out of a marsh? What are you going to do? Scrub grass? Scrub mud? You can't get oil out of a marsh. So, Prince Valdez Sound, very clear. What do we have there? Very, very clear oil spill. In that case, in rocks, in the sound, easy to clean up. How much do you think was cleaned up? 90%? 80%? 50%? No, I'm afraid you'd be over-optimistic. A third? A third? Two-thirds? A third was cleaned up? No. A quarter? No. A fifth? A sixth? A tenth? No. Not even 10% of that oil was cleaned up. 5 to 7%, about a 15th or 17th of that oil was cleaned up. For every drop of oil that was cleaned up, 15 or 16 drops were not. And that's in the best case scenario. That is among rock. That is in an enclosed neighborhood. That is a smaller spill. That was a contained spill. And that, prior to this one, was the worst oil spill in American history. So following that, what was then considered to be catastrophic spill, again, even though it's far, far less catastrophic than this one, far easier to clean than this one, and again, 5 to 7% was cleaned, even though they were out scrubbing those rocks. Following that spill, Congress passed the law. A law to make sure that oil spills would be cleaned up. And they made oil companies tax a barrel of oil to put money into the fund. How much is the tax? Well, the tax comes down to about a tenth of a penny per gallon of gas that you buy. It's very little. You put in 18 gallons of gas in your car, you might pay 2 cents. 2 cents, maybe 3 cents for every time you fill up your tank. And that money went into a fund that now has a little over $1 billion. And there was a cap on that fund. Just $1 billion would go out because they figured that it couldn't cost more than that. So at that time, Congress passed a law with this tiny tax, and that was supposed to cover all the economic damages of an oil spill. Now, any oil spill, to be clear, has two types of damages. There's the damages of cleanup, which there's no limit on. That's the scraping the rocks. But as we've seen from Exxon's case, 93 to 95% never was cleaned up. So Exxon didn't pay for that. They just didn't clean it up. This case went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. A jury sought punitive and received punitive damages against Exxon Valdez for the disaster. And after, 19 years of appeals, the Supreme Court, run by the five right-wingers appointed by Republicans, rejected, by the way, by two of the four justices, also appointed by Republicans, two appointed by Democrats. This right-wing Supreme Court said, Exxon, don't worry about it. Don't pay for the damages. Don't pay for the punitive damages. We'll just let the people who eat salmon suffer. Pretty harsh, particularly when Exxon Valdez promised and swore they would make it good. They would make it all good. They swore just like BP is swearing today. And 19 years later, when they didn't make it good, who noticed? Who even knows? Did you know that 95% of the Valdez oil spill was not cleaned up? I didn't know it until I did my own research. So you see, companies promise, we'll pay for everything. And then by the time all the litigation settles 20 years later, a lot of people don't get paid. So this fund set up by Congress says you got to pay for all the damages of cleanup, trying to scrub that oil off the rocks, trying to get it away from the shore. But when it comes to economic damages, when it comes to the loss of fish, salmon up in Alaska, when it comes to the loss of shrimp and crawfish and crabs and oysters down in the Gulf, when it comes to tourism, there's a lot of tourism down in the Gulf. When it comes to those economic losses, the amount was capped at a mere $75 million. Now, it's maybe hard to describe how $75 million, which sounds like a lot of money, is a real pittance to these oil companies. Maybe if I let you know that it's, you could multiply that times 100 and you still wouldn't come close to the amount of profits that BP made last year or the year before or the year before. It's a tiny amount for BP, and it's a tiny amount for the destruction of one-fifth of America's seafood, for three-quarters of America's shrimp. You like shrimp? Three-quarters of America's shrimp comes from the Gulf. Well, used to. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen anymore. So the damages were limited. They were limited to $75 million. They were limited probably the amount of one big shrimper. And everyone else was going to have to suffer. Everyone, shrimpers and crab fishermen and oyster fishermen and tourist business, they were all going to suffer, not be compensated. So the Democrats decided to raise the cap to at least $10 billion. And the Republicans said, no, make the people in the Gulf suffer. Did you hear that on your news? Let me tell you how it happened right after the break. If you want to call in, 888-488-MARK. I want to hear from you. We'll be right back.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. Did you know that the law, this law passed after the Valdez oil spill under Ronald Reagan, that the law says that only $75 million in economic damages are compensated? Oh, a few pennies are put into this $1 billion fund, but what if $1 billion isn't enough? We know that $75 million isn't enough. So two senators, actually pretty much the whole Democratic Party, tried to sponsor a bill to increase that limit from $75 million to $10 billion. That was Senator Ben Nelson of Florida, Senator Menendez of New Jersey. Pretty much the entire Democratic Party was behind it. In fact, the majority leader, Harry Reid of the Senate, said he wanted no limit at all. But $10 billion is pretty good. It's a lot better than nothing. I prefer no limit. I think you should pay for all the damages. But $10 billion is about 120 times $75 million, just to give you an idea of the numbers here. It's a much bigger number. And it might compensate a lot of people. What did the Republicans do when they heard about the Menendez-Nelson bill to increase the damages BP might have to pay, or future oil companies that do spills might have to pay, the economic damages they might have to pay to shrimpers and crabbers and oystermen? What did the Republicans say? They said no. They said, we're going to filibuster. We are not going to allow the people in the Gulf to be compensated for the damage BP caused. Now, why would they do that? I mean, after all, many Republicans have constituents in the Gulf. If you look at the Gulf Coast of Louisiana or Texas or Mississippi or Alabama or the Panhandle of Florida, if you look at the area of the country that's most affected, you'll find it's largely, almost entirely represented by Republicans. Who do they work for? Why don't they want the people of the Gulf to be compensated? Well, they don't have to answer that. And the reason they don't have to answer that is they never allowed the bill to come up for a vote. They used the time-honored principle tactic of filibustering. I don't know how principled it is, but it's something the Republicans have done pretty much to all of President Obama's legislation. Everything from giving money to our troops, which is relatively uncontroversial, to the health care bill. They filibuster everything. And they stood as one. Every single Republican voted for the filibuster to deny people in the Gulf the $10 billion they needed capped to be paid for by BP. So President Obama was at an impasse. He didn't know what to do. Very few people even know about the $75 million limit. In fact, I went on Fox News and tried to explain to the people at Fox News about the $75 million limit. They'd never heard of it. Obviously, Obama wasn't getting his press out, and the bill to overturn the $75 million wasn't happening. After the break, I'll play for you that clip. Or early on in the oil crisis, I tried to explain to Fox News there's a limit here that they're not getting. But the Democrats were stymied, and very, very little of the public or the media was talking about the proposal to increase the damages from this pittance, the $75 million, to a respectable $10 billion. And even if the bill passed, there was a problem, let's face it, because it was unclear whether or not it could be applied retroactively. Sure, Congress can say in the future, you have to pay for all the damages you cause, but given that it had been capped in the past by the bill under Reagan, given that it had been capped in the past at $75 million, there was a real question of whether the government could retroactively force BP to pay. That might be considered a takings and a violation of the Due Process Clause under the Constitution. It was a real problem. So even if the law passed, it was a real problem. So what did President Obama do? President Obama did an amazing thing. He listened to the people at BP who promised to pay for everything just like Exxon did 30 years ago. And he said, I'm going to make you be good on your promise. And he raised the limit. He raised it from $10 billion to $20 billion. He took the people in BP, he took them in his first time he actually had talked with them directly. I guess they hadn't agreed to it until then. Brought them into the White House, spoke one-on-one with Tony Hayward, the chairman, president of BP and the chairman of the board, spoke to him as well. And we don't know what was said in private. But here is what I believe was said, and we'll probably find out in a few years. I believe he said, look, the American people are hopping mad at you right now. They know you've promised to pay, but there's no proof you will pay. So you've got two choices. Either you play the nice way or the hard way. Either you put aside $20 billion, and that's not a limit. You may have to pay more. I'm not limiting your liability. But you put aside $20 billion, which is double, remember, what the Democrats are trying to get in Congress, that the Republicans thought was too much and they were against. Put aside $20 billion. We'll put a very respected man, Ken Feinberg, in charge. He's the guy who handed out the 9/11 claims. By the way, I worked with Ken Feinberg. He is an incredible and I think very just man, someone who's really trying hard to do the right thing. I don't think he either overpaid or underpaid the people who sought compensation. I think he's a very fair man. So he's someone respected by both parties. We'll put him in charge of this fund, and we'll make sure that the money's paid up front. And you can do that and get a little bit of good public reaction, and that you can do that. Or you have another choice. What's the other choice? Well, let's face it. One, I'll endorse the Democrats' legislation. Two, I'll do something that hasn't been done. I will go and make a primetime address from the Oval Office blaming the Republicans for harming the American people, telling them that because they filibustered that bill, shrimpers suffer, oystermen suffer, crabbers suffer, and it's not their fault. If you spent your life, generation after generation, getting shrimp out of the Gulf, it's not your fault there's an oil spill, but they have to suffer, and it's due to the Republican Party, and it's due to BP. That I went to BP, they said they were going to pay, I said, put your money where your mouth is, set the money aside, and BP said no. So first, I think he promised he was going to use the bully pulpit to come and tell the American people what BP were really about. Then I think he was going to support this legislation, which may or may not have had retroactive effect. Then I think he would have done litigation to make sure that people would be paid. He would direct his attorney general to do that. And finally, he might even endorse a boycott. Who knows? Because citizens, knowing that BP had just lied to them, promising to give them money and not giving it out, might just boycott BP and really destroy BP's business. In other words, I think Obama said, it's our way, my way, the American people's way, or the highway. And he made BP pay up. And you know what I think about that? I think that's presidential leadership. I think it's terrific. Joe Barton, Congressman Barton, calls it a shakedown. To me, if that's what you want to call it, you call it what you wish. To me, it's in the best tradition of a very tough president by the name of Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson was known as someone who could really bully people to get what he wants. He wouldn't break the law. Don't get me wrong, and I don't think Obama broke the law in any way, stretch or form, but he used persuasion and threats and promises and good and bad and carrot and stick, and he largely got what he wanted. Honestly, I'm not so sure we'd have the Civil Rights Act of 1964 if it hadn't been for Lyndon Johnson. I don't know that John Kennedy could have done it, and I think he was a very good president. So what's fascinating is when you hear the criticism, we're going to play some more after the break, when you hear the criticism of Congressman Barton, who used to be the chair of the Energy Committee in the House, the Republican chair, and he calls it a shakedown, he means it pejoratively. I think it's pretty good. He means that the president put maximum arm-twisting pressure on BP, and I say, why not? Why not? Who should pay? The oil company that took steps to try to save money and ended up having, a test valve in a blowout preventer, that the rubber, the annular that was supposed to keep everything done was already blown up and destroyed. The battery was dead. The hydraulic fluid was leaking. The ram valves that were supposed to be there weren't working. One had a tester valve. They used seaweed. They used seawater instead of mud. The 14-pound mud that's supposed to keep the oil pressure down. They decided to use seawater. It's cheaper. It's easier to get to the oil later on. They did every single thing they could do wrong. Who should pay? Them or the guy who for generations he and his family have been catching shrimp in the Gulf? The woman who runs a nice tourism shop. She runs either maybe fishing or windsurfing out on the beach of the Gulf. Who should pay? Whose fault is it? BP? Are the men and women of the Gulf who are trying very hard to make a living? I think the answer is clear. The problem is not with President Obama. The problem is with this law. This law that limited economic damages. So President Obama did the right thing. He pushed. I'm sure he pushed. I'm sure he twisted some arms. Judson Phillips, the head of the Tea Party, called it a shakedown. Let's find this clip right now. We've got Judson Phillips, the leader of Tea Party Nation. And what did he say? He says, I'd call it extortion. If I tried something like that, I'd be looking at a long sentence in a federal prison. There's a legal system to assign liability and assess damages. The regime simply wants to bypass that. Well, that's true. Obama does want to bypass that. The legal system does say, shrimpers, you lose. BP, you win. The legal system does say, you want to pollute someone's water? You go right ahead. Let's say, for example, you can make millions of dollars and all you have to do is destroy your neighbor's house. Destroy it! Let your neighbor suffer. Republicans believe in this. They believe that if you pollute the water, if you pollute the air, you should take those economic profits, and those that drink the water and breathe the air, they should suffer. That's what they believe. That's what the Tea Party Nation believes. That's what Judson Phillips believes. He calls it extortion. He wants to use the legal system, which was already trumped up by these crazy laws passed by a Republican president, to limit the damages. And what did the Republican Study Committee say? What's the Republican Study Committee? This is the majority of Republicans in the House. The majority of Republicans in the House, 135 or so members of the House, are part of the Republican Study Committee. Let's see if we can show this one up on the screen. All right? Here's what it says. The Republican Study Committee said, BP's reported willingness to go along with the White House's new fund suggests that the Obama administration is hard at work exerting its brand of Chicago-style shakedown politics. These actions are emblematic, the Republicans say, of a politicization of our economy. It's all out of the administration's drive for greater power and control. Really? Making BP pay for the damage it caused is about the president trying to aggregate power? Really? See, I think it's about the president using his power. Using his power appropriately. Using his power to make the people that caused the damage pay for the damage. At the end of the day, I don't care what the Republicans say about, oh, we really care about the shrimpers. Their actions by their votes, their actions by their words, the Tea Party as well, believes that if an oil company spills oil all over your front lawn, it's you who has to pay. They destroy the shrimp business that you and your family have tried for generations. It's you who has to pay. When it comes to a conflict between a big corporation and a regular person, it's you who has to pay. At the end of the day, in November 2010, the American people are going to vote on who they think should pay for these damages. We'll find out what happens. We'll be right back after this.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. When the oil spill crisis first happened, I went on Fox News and tried to explain to the host, Eric Bolling, why it is that we needed a new law, why it is that there was a $75 million cap. And what's fascinating, and Eric's a very intelligent man, but he or Fox or someone didn't even know there was this limit. Let me play for you a little clip from when I went on Fox News talking about the $75 million limit.
I'm sure you know about the Oil Spill Liability Act that says they only have to pay $75 million for a $24 billion company to deal with the economic damages of what they've caused. Let's all agree that we shouldn't have a taxpayer bailout of oil companies. Let's end that law. Can you agree with me, Eric?
Well, wait,
Beck, I'll let you jump in here real quick, but you're talking about $75 million. Yes, BP is going to pay tens of billions to clean this up. And by the way, they do have that valve. It just failed. I'm sorry, Rebecca. Go.
They don't have the remote control valve.
They
don't have the remote control valve, the acoustic valve that's required by Norway and Brazil. They do not, Eric. Look it up.
Okay, well, the bigger picture here, Mark, I mean, you know, are we going to let the country be derailed by one accident, one tragedy? I mean, we could look back at past tragedies like the space shuttle disaster, you know, and just call off the whole space program after that. No, you have to learn from your mistakes and continue on, move forward. So I don't know. I think you saying that they're going to completely call off offshore drilling and open new areas, maybe off the mark. It's premature.
I think they should pay for the damage they caused. Right now, in fact, there's a bill that's sponsored by Democratic senators to make the oil companies pay for it all. They're limited to $75 million. Two-thirds of all shrimp in the nation comes from Louisiana. They're fishermen. They're going to be out of work for who knows how many years. They should have to pay for that damage. Why should the fishermen have to suffer because of the oil company's mistake? Until oil companies are willing to pay for the damage they caused, they shouldn't be drilling
they
in the first place.
They are going to pay for it, though. I don't understand why they're not.
No, they're not.
Yes,
they're
they
limited
are going
to $75 million. We're limited to $75 million economic damages.
First of all, Obama said he's keeping BP accountable, and the CEO of BP said we are responsible for the cleanup. They will pay.
The cleanup only, but not the economic damages.
No, they said
we're going to lose so much shrimp and seafood.
I'm with you, Eric. Mark, I saw that as well. Now, the one thing that along those
they said they would, but they won't.
Okay, that's where the lawyers come in, right, to settle this.
But Rebecca, I hope you and Eric and I can agree on getting rid of this $75 million limitation and saying they have to clean up all the economic damages.
You're hanging your hat on something ridiculous. This is going to be Exxon.
Okay, so let's be clear about this. This is very interesting. This was early on in the spill, right? So, I guess I don't blame them for not doing their homework. But I apparently convinced the other host. You saw the woman say, all right, I agree with that. And they didn't know there was a limit. They didn't understand, because BP does have to pay for cleanup, that they were limited to $75 million economic damages. I informed the Fox hosts of that. But you heard what they said. They said, but BP says it's going to pay. And Obama says he's going to make them pay. Well, that's true. BP did say it was going to pay. Again, just like Exxon said it was going to pay for Valdez 30 years ago and ended up not paying. And Obama did say he was going to make him pay. How was Obama going to make him pay? Obama just made them pay. That's the most wonderful thing that's come out of this horrible catastrophe, the $20 billion fund that Obama made them pay. But listen again to Congressman Joe Barton, because he apologizes to BP. He doesn't think that Obama should have forced them to pay. He preferred the current system, the system whereby they don't pay. They pay $75 million, which is a pittance. Think about why Republicans are against making BP pay for the damage it caused. Let's listen more to Joe Barton's apology to BP.
For the future, if I called you into my office and I had the subcommittee chairman, Mr. Stupak, with me, who was legitimately conducting an oversight investigation on your company, and said, if you put so many millions of dollars in a project in my congressional district, I could go to jail and should go to jail. Now, there is no question that British Petroleum owns this lease. There is no question that BP made decisions that objective people think compromise safety. There is no question that BP is liable for the damages. But we have a due process system where we go through hearings, in some cases court cases, litigation, and determine what those damages are and when those damages should be paid.
Okay. Did you catch that? Because you might have missed it. I want to make sure you caught that here. All right. We have a litigation. First of all, he says we have a litigation system. And you got to go by due process. You got to go to claims. You got to go to courts. And then we'll see what you're paid. Joe Barton knows what most Americans don't know, what even the hosts of Fox News don't know, that they're only going to pay $75 million. People are going to go through all these court hearings and all these processes. It took 19 years for the Exxon Valdez spill. At the end of the day, $75 million. A pittance. Very, very little money. Joe Barton is defending the current system. He's not saying, I'm defending the $75 million limit. No, that would be a little hard on the constituents in the Gulf. No, he's saying, let due process happen. And since we already have a law that says you're home free, since we already have a law that says you don't have to worry about paying for the pollution you cause, well then, let the process do its job. Let's hear more what he has to say.
So, I'm only speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for anybody else, but I apologize. I do not want to live in a country where any time a citizen or a corporation does something that is legitimately wrong is subject to some sort of political pressure that is, again, in my words, amounts to a shakedown.
Whoa! I don't want to live in a country where if somebody legitimately does something wrong, and he concedes BP's done it wrong, he says objective people know. How could he not concede this point? But objective people know that BP caused this problem, and Transocean, Halliburton. Clearly it's BP's fault, but he doesn't want to live in a country where the president subjects the wrongdoer to political pressure to make good when they've done wrong. Think about that. Let that soak through. I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. I want you to think about what he just said. Congressman Joe Barton, former chairman of the Energy Committee in the House of Representatives, the highest ranking Republican on energy, the guy who drafted the laws that give $35 billion a year of taxpayer dollars to oil companies, a man who gets hundreds of thousands of dollars every year for his campaigns from oil companies, a man who has tens of thousands of dollars in investments in oil companies, a man owned by the oil companies, does not want to live in a country where when he knows the oil companies have screwed up, possibly destroying an environment for not just one generation, but two or three or four, I'm worried I'm never going to eat Gulf shrimp again. The oil in those marshes, it's not like the oils on the rocks in Alaska. You can't clean oil out of a marsh. You just got to hope that Mother Nature and microorganisms eat up enough oil to later on survive again, and we all hope it does. It's his belief that when objectively oil companies do things wrong, that the President of the United States should say, I'm sorry, BP. I apologize, BP. You ruined our way of life. We need to leave you alone. We shouldn't make you pay for it. What plan is this man living on? What principles does this man have? And he said he's only speaking for himself, so he happens to be wild and crazy. Well, he's the ranking Republican on the Energy Committee. He's a former chairman of the Energy Committee. He is still the highest Republican in the House of Representatives dealing with energy matters. He's not some backbencher, some lowly new freshman Republican. And he's not alone. One, the majority, more than 130, I think it's 140, members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, agree that this was Chicago-style politics. The majority of the Republican Party in Congress is against the President of the United States forcing BP to pay for its damages. Let that sink in. Why? Why? Can they even articulate a reason? You know, we have a tort system in this country. We have a system of laws. If I accidentally hit your car, I got to pay for the damages. If I accidentally injure you, I got to pay for the damages. If I dig in my lawn and it makes your house subside because I dig a tunnel underneath and it falls, I got to pay for the damages. If I'm a doctor and I leave a scalpel in you by mistake, I got to pay for the damages. BP, a multi-billion dollar company, tried to save a few million all kinds of ways. Didn't have a battery in its blowout preventer, hydraulic fluid leaking, didn't have the shearing ram it was supposed to have, used seawater instead of the mud. The cap, the rubber cap on that had blown up into bits with rubber raining down. Heck, I know enough about toilets to know that I can't get mine to flush if it's got no rubber stopper. How are they going to stop a massive oil pressure from 5 miles underneath the earth, the deepest they'd ever gone? They didn't have the rubber stopper. They took tremendous negligent steps. I think gross negligence. And now the BP says we'll pay, and they better. But under the law, they don't have to pay. And we look to our lawmakers in Congress, and the Republicans say, we're not going to make them pay. So then we go to the President of the United States, our last hope. And he may have had some choice words, he makes them pay. To me, that's a cause of celebration. That's a cause of celebration. Why are the Republicans against compensating the people who suffered under BP? They'll tell you they want that compensation. Then why are they against this fund? Why are they against setting aside $20 billion? Why are they against it, and why won't they say? Why is the Tea Party against compensating fishermen? Why are the majority of the Republicans in the House complaining about this? Whatever you think about President Obama, whatever you think about health care, whatever you think about the economy, we're going to go back to the economy after the break. I think this is one of his shining moments. I think this will go down in history as his Lyndon Johnson moment, where he pressured, yes, call the shakedown if you will. I'm glad it happened. Make BP pay. You want to call and express your opinion? 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Back out.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. The oil spill is not the only news. There's still the economy, which is sputtering along. It's true that it's much, much better than when George Bush was president. We, in 08, were losing jobs at the rate of up to 700,000 a month. But ever since the stimulus package passed by President Obama and the Democrats without a single Republican vote in the House, and only a couple Republicans vote in the Senate, since that bill passed, we've stopped losing jobs and started creating jobs. The economy's not growing fast enough. I'll be the first to agree with you. The economy's not growing fast enough. Unemployment, which is a lagging indicator, is still in the upper nines. Why is that? and what should be done about it. Well, again, history's in order. Let's give the inside scoop on the surplus. Excuse me, on the stimulus bill. There hasn't been a surplus since Bill Clinton. The stimulus package was designed by the Democratic Congress to help with the damages to the economy. Now, remember why we're in this mess. It's all because of gambling by Wall Street, betting hundreds of trillions of dollars on these crazy arcane instruments called credit default swaps. We've done other shows on that. The point is that it was due to not regulating corporations that were in this mess, just like it's due to not regulating corporations in the Gulf that were in an oil spill mess. Wonder if that's a coincidence. Whenever you don't regulate massive corporations, they ruin things. I don't think it's a coincidence. But whatever the case, when President Barack Obama took office, we were in the worst recession since the Great Depression. We were losing jobs at 700,000 a year. We were in a financial crisis, the worst kind, kinds we had not seen since the 1920s. And I'm going to use my economics degree here. I do have a degree in economics, to talk about what happens when you have a recession, particularly a deep recession like this one. And this has happened in the 1920s, and it happened today. When you have a recession, what does it mean? What is a recession? A recession means that people are not using all the capacity they have. People are unemployed, even though people are willing to work, they can't find jobs. Even though factories can produce, they're idle. And why are they idle? Because no one's buying, and you have a vicious cycle. Right? Factories won't produce because no one's buying. People won't buy because they don't have jobs. They don't have jobs because the factories aren't producing. And it goes down and gets worse and worse and worse. And then if consumer confidence is down and people stop spending and more people get fired and more people stop spending, it gets to be a vicious cycle. A vicious cycle downward. The other thing that happens in a recession is there's a terrible impact on state budgets. Federal budgets too. They get worse. Deficit spending goes up. Deficits go up. Why? Well, think about a state. Any state, really. 49 states require a balanced budget. Every state except Vermont requires a balanced budget. So here you have a state, and it's a bad recession. That means that people are out of work. Some people are taking cuts in pay. Obviously, less tax dollars are coming in. But more money is going out. You got to pay unemployment insurance. You got to pay Social Security benefits. You have to pay more health care for Medicaid and other programs that when people are poor, they use more because there are more poor people around. In other words, even if the state does nothing but take in the same taxes it always takes and spend the same spending it always spends and you have a balanced budget in good years, you're going to have a massive deficit in bad years because without any fault of the state or any fault of state employees or anything like that, you have less money coming in and more going out just because of bad times. So states have to balance their budgets. Federal government does not. State has to balance their budgets. What do they have to do? They have to raise taxes or cut spending to balance their budgets. Raising taxes in the middle of a recession, that's tough. Not only is it really, really hard politically, virtually impossible politically, it's really hard economically, right? People are suffering. That's the worst time to raise people's taxes. And it's really hard if you cut spending. Who are you going to cut? Who works for, where does state money go? Where does local money go? It mostly goes to public employees, teachers, police officers, firefighters, people who work very, very hard for relatively low pay. I don't know a single teacher, police officer, or firefighter that makes a tenth of what the average hedge fund manager makes. So when you have a recession, states are in this bind. They've got to raise taxes or cut spending. Indeed, the federal government's in the same bind, right? They also get much less money coming in federal taxes because people are poor, and they have more money going out in unemployment, and Social Security, and Medicare, and Medicaid, and any programs for the poor. It's a tough time. Deficits skyrocket. We saw that under George Bush, right? George Bush brought us the first $1 trillion deficit. How'd he do it? Well, by bad economic policies. I mean, he did it also through spending and other things in the past, but that kind of stuff only brought the deficit up to 400, 500, 600 billion. How'd it get over a trillion? The deficit. Any economist will tell you. That's how the deficit got so high. And what's the solution? How do we get rid of these deficits? This may seem counterintuitive, so stick with me here. The solution is spend more. Spend more? But that increases the deficit. I know. Hang with me here. Spend more. I said at the outset of the broadcast that I'm going to say something that virtually you never hear on television. Spend more. Deficit, spend more. That's right. Here we have the lowest tax burden in decades. By the way, that's another thing you don't hear much on TV. President Obama currently has given us the lowest tax burden in decades, lower than under George W. Bush, lower than under Bill Clinton, lower than under George Herbert Walker Bush, lower than under Ronald Reagan. Did you know that? Lower than under Jimmy Carter, lower than under Ford. We have to go back to pretty much pre-World War II days to find tax burdens as low as they are now. So we're paying very little taxes. Sorry, you may think you're paying a lot. It's actually very low historically as a percentage of the nation's economy. But we need more spending. The reason we need more spending is because we have all of this excess in the economy. Let me give you an example from history, because this may sound crazy to you. It's basic economic history, though, and if you've taken an economics course, you know exactly what I'm talking about. In 1929, we had the crash, right? October 1929, Black Tuesday, the stock market went down, we had a financial panic, and we had a recession. Frankly, a relatively mild recession, certainly more mild than the one that President Obama is facing. And Herbert Hoover did what people told him to do at that time. He balanced the budget. So here you have less money coming into the government, more money going out, so he balanced the budget. What did he do? He raised taxes and he cut spending. And he turned a relatively mild recession into the greatest world depression, greatest depression the world has ever seen. Certainly the greatest depression the United States has ever seen. I believe in balanced budgets. In good times, I believe in surpluses. Thank you, Bill Clinton, for giving us the greatest surplus in modern times and the greatest economy. Actually, the greatest surplus ever in American history, and the greatest economy ever in American history. But how can you do both? When you have good times, you can run a surplus. I'm for it. I believe in surpluses in good times. But I do not believe in surpluses in bad times. In bad times, more than any other time, you need to spend money. Because otherwise, taxes go up, benefits go down, people suffer, there's less spending, more people get fired, benefits then have to go even higher, less taxes, and you have a vicious cycle. You have the Great Depression cycle. So when the stimulus package happened, I don't know if you remember this, when it happened, President Obama and the Democrats wanted to give $80 billion in aid to the states. They couldn't get it through Congress. Not a single Republican in the House voted for the package, and only three Republicans in the Senate voted for it. They needed three at the time. The Republicans were refusing to seat Al Franken. So the Democrats had only 59. They didn't have Arlen Specter at the time, so that makes 58. So in order to get Arlen Specter, Olympia Snowe, and Susan Collins to sign onto the board, they had to have aid to the states. They had to do economically the worst possible thing. They also had to include a lot of tax cuts, including things that really don't stimulate the economy much at all. Things like alternative minimum tax fixes that basically help relatively wealthy people save more of their money. That's fine, but saving money doesn't get you out of recession. Spending money does. How does it work? Let's say the government were to spend, another $300 billion. The Republicans would go crazy. The Tea Party would go crazy. They'd say, oh, we're going into a massive deficit. What happens when the government spends another $100, $200 billion? Actually, a lot more is spent, right? Because if the government spends it ordering anything, ordering parts to make bridges, perhaps, then the factory that makes bridges has more demand. They pay their workers. They hire more people. Unemployment goes down. They pay more of their workers. And what do the workers do? They have more money to spend. They can go and they can buy what? They can buy toys for their family on Christmas Day. They can pay more rent. They can go to the grocery store. They can spend more money. And when they spend more money on vacations, well, the tourism industry goes up and they spend more money and they spend more money. It's what economists call the multiplier effect. The best way to get out of recession is to spend. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't cut the deficit, but in order to get to that point, we've got to spend more money. The reason why we haven't moved out of this recession has nothing to do with President Obama and nothing to do with the Democrats. It has to do with the fact that Republicans cut the aid. The Republicans forced your state to raise its taxes, forced your state to cut its spending, forced your state to fire police officers and teachers and firefighters. The federal government can print money and should print money in the middle of a recession. If it did that, if it paid the money to the states to cover it up, to cover up their budget shortfalls, to make sure the multiplier effect happens, and we come roaring out of this recession, then by all means pay it back. I am for surpluses in good times. Bill Clinton did a great idea. He had surpluses in good times. George Bush, well, we had a relatively strong economy, not as strong as Clinton, but much stronger than today at the beginning, and he spent all that money. That's the worst time. When you run a deficit in good times, then you just get inflation. That's a real economic mistake. So right now, there is a jobs bill on the floor. And right now, the Republicans are filibustering because they don't want to spend. And the reason they don't want to spend, some are simply ignorant of economics, and some, I think, are following their leader, Rush Limbaugh. They want the economy to fail because they want Obama to fail. They know if the country fails and more people are unemployed and there are fewer jobs, then they might just win the elections. I ask them to stop their cynical plea. I ask you to call your member of Congress, because some Democrats are balking on this as well. Whether you're a member of Congress, a Democrat or Republican, ask them to support, this is crazy, may sound crazy, massive government spending, jobs programs. You want to get this nation roaring out of the recession, we need more government spending now. Spend now, and we can pay the deficit 2-3 years from now. If you don't spend now, we'll be mired in a recession. And who is to blame? The same people who advised Herbert Hoover, the same people who wanted to have a balanced budget in the 1920s. There's a time for a balanced budget. It's not now. Spend, baby, spend. And then we'll have a strong economy. Hope you enjoyed the show. Leave a comment on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. This is Mark Levine, signing off.